I have some specific reasons that I've selected at this time to investigate, there are reasons, to investigate this brief, what I would consider very significant episode in the life of Israel. And we find the book sandwiched between Judges and the first book of Samuel. And the reasons that I, for choosing this book, I hope will become clear as we continue on. However, it's my hope too that as we investigate this book, you will begin to develop your own reasons for having looked into this book as well. The book of Ruth, for its size, has attracted a lot of attention, and some consider it undue attention. It consists of four short chapters, which, as we will see, can be read in less than 15 minutes. Its setting is rural, and the events it narrates are domestic in nature. The main characters are common people with no influence beyond their own communities. And its simple story-like quality, while aesthetically pleasing, some feel, lacks the power to attract the mind that longs to dip into the deep well of truth. In fact, some, because of its fairy tale-like quality, some have feel that it isn't even a historical book. This is just a story, a nice story. This, however, I believe is very far from the truth. To thoughtfully read the pages of this remarkable little book, I believe, is indeed to dip into the well of truth. And a lot has been said about this book. It's attracted much praise, and I can't imagine a better way to introduce it than to give you a sampling of some of the things that have been said about this book. Goethe, the famous poet, writer, said, "Ruth is the loveliest complete work on a small scale." No poet in the world, it has been said, has written a more beautiful short story. Again, it is indeed a splendid example of the storyteller's art, and it is more than a little interesting to find in the book, which comes down from remote antiquity, a tale which conforms so exactly to the standards looked for in a good story in modern times. The most enchanting short narrative in the sacred literature. In style, it is matchless, fresh, simple, and graceful. An immortal work, one has called it. Many have likened it to a beautiful valley full of flowers, fertile fields, and gentle brooks. The spell of the book is altogether irresistible. An oasis in a desert of destruction and famine. And Ruth has inspired some of the world's finest writers as well. Ruth was the gleaner maid and the meek ancestress of the day of David the psalmist for the writer Dante. Ruth was also the model for Christian's youthful companion Mercy in Bunyan's Pilgrim's Progress. And was also the paradigm for Milton's virtuous young lady, who, like Mary of old, was the chooser of better things. And Keats, though I think he wrongly portrays Ruth, Keats portrays her as a homesick, longing for Moab, having a nightingale singing to her as she stood in tears among the alien corn. However, one of the most astute and critical observations on this book that I have heard came from no less than the grandson of Tom and June Duncan. Which one, you're probably wondering at this point. I'm speaking of Master Stephen Cole, who resides now in Angola. Once after a Sunday school class where they had been studying the Old Testament, the order of the Old Testament books, he came up to Sue and he said, "Mom, why is Joshua always judging Ruth?" Well, interestingly, Joshua has not always been judging Ruth. That is, the Hebrew order of the Old Testament, the canon, has not always placed Ruth at the end of Judges. Okay? It has been placed in what they call the writings as well. There's three sections to the Hebrew canon. There's the law, the Torah, there are the prophets, where they have the former and latter prophets, and they have the writings. Within the writings, they have what are called the scroll, the megalot, which has five small works: the Song of Solomon, Ruth, Lamentations, Ecclesiastes, and Esther. And these were placed in this scroll because they were used for liturgical purposes within the religious year of Israel. Song of Solomon is read in the first month at the time of Passover. Ruth is read in the third month, and it's read at the time of Pentecost, or the Feast of Weeks, the harvest festival. Lamentations is read in the fifth month, read at the anniversary of the destruction of Jerusalem. Ecclesiastes in the seventh month at the Feast of Tabernacles. And Esther was read in the 12th month at the Feast of Purim, which is celebrating the deliverance of Israel from the wicked plot of Haman while they were in exile. Now, in this threefold division of the Hebrew Old Testament, there was one organization where there were 22 books and one where there were 24 books. In the 22-book division, what you have is you have 1 and 2 Samuel, 1 and 2 Kings as one book. You have the minor prophets, all 12 of them, as one book. You have Ruth and Lamentations. Ruth is part of Judges. Lamentations is part of Jeremiah, one book. Ezra and Nehemiah are one book, and 1 and 2 Chronicles are one book. When they move to a 24-book organization, they then took Ruth out of, away from Judges, and Lamentations away from Jeremiah, and they placed them then in this megaloth, into this scroll. So Ruth has been not always judging Ruth. I mean, Joshua has not always judged Ruth, and in fact has been very much an integral part of the worship life of Israel. And this tradition is carried on today. The book of Ruth is read every year during this Jewish celebration of Pentecost. And it was given to Israel by God, that is Pentecost, as a lasting ordinance, in part to cause them to remember their deliverance from Egypt. Later, during the intertestamental period, it was also used as an anniversary of the giving of the law at Sinai. In light of God's ordinance for them to celebrate Pentecost, one of the things they were not to do, because of the remembrance of their deliverance from Egypt, was not to reap to the very edges of their field, but to leave those gleanings there for the poor and the alien. And why? Because you too were once an alien in another country, and God had redeemed them out. And that theme is a very significant theme within the book of Ruth. And it's not a coincidence that they read Ruth at the time of Pentecost. Its significance in this association of their slavery in Egypt will be best developed as we, continue the study of the book itself. But I want to do introduce one observation that I think is helpful here. Some months back, Jerry Hawthorne gave a series on the Ten Commandments. And if I'm not mistaken, one of the things that he tried to lead us into an understanding of is that the law was a gracious provision of God for the people of Israel. That is, it was a manifestation of God's grace. It wasn't to bring them into bondage to some legalistic code, but to deliver them from the bondage of ignorance and the practice of false religion. It was a revelation of the true God himself to the nation of Israel. And I believe that the book of Ruth dramatically portrays this truth of the gracious provision of God's law to the people of Israel. And I believe this is just one of the important truths of the book of Ruth that we will discover in its pages. Now, to see these things, as we read the book of Ruth, demands a thoughtful reading of the text itself, okay? And one Jewish writer has put it this way, because if we don't read thoughtfully, we will not get these things. A Jewish writer said, judging from the English translation alone, or even from the text of the Hebrew in the book of Ruth, the reader may be tempted to wonder what room there is for comment or elucidation on the text. The simplicity of style of the book of Ruth and the directness of its plot seem to leave little to the imagination. That is so if we read and do not ponder, he says. For sages and scholars have vied with one another in their efforts to reveal the treasures hidden within this book. And there are treasures hidden within this book. But we need to read it thoughtfully. And to read it thoughtfully means we need to read it with purpose. Okay? This time I'm going to have this book read. I'm going to have Bob Botten read it for us. My voice isn't the greatest speaking voice. Bob, I think, has a nice voice, and it might draw you in a little easier. But I'm going to have Bob read the book. And it doesn't really take that long. But one of the things I want us to do is read and listen thoughtfully. And this requires, again, that we come to the book with a purpose. And what I want us to do is to read the book with two things in mind. One, what do you think is the overall purpose or aim of the book? That is, why has it been included in God's special revelation to us? Okay? What is the overall purpose or aim of the book? As Bob reads it, think through that. You can just listen, or it'll be read from the NIV, and that's the translation in the pulpit, so if it's in the pews, and you can follow along if you'd like. So that's the first one. Secondly, try and identify the redeeming values that are set forth. Now, this is different from the purpose. The purpose, we're looking for something more singular in nature. What is the purpose? Second, though, values can be many, many things. So I want us to listen in two ways. One, look for the purpose. And secondly, what are the overriding values within the book? Now, I know in one reading, we're not going to be able to ascertain these things with any certainty. But we have to begin somewhere, and we have to read with purpose. Okay? So as Bob comes, and I'd like Bob to come now, and read this book, think about these things. After the reading, we'll go ahead and begin to discuss them.
Let's begin. In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land. And a man from Bethlehem in Judah, together with his wife and two sons, went to live for a while in the country of Moab. The man's name was Elimelech, his wife's name Naomi. And the names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephrathites from Bethlehem, Judah, and they went to Moab and lived there. Now Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left with her two sons. They married Moabite women, one named Orpah and the other Ruth. After they had lived there about 10 years, both Mahlon and Chilion also died, and Naomi was left without her two sons and her husband. When she heard in Moab that the Lord had come to the aid of his people by providing food for them, Naomi and her daughters-in-law prepared to return home from there. With her two daughters-in-law, she left the place where she had been living and set out on the road that would take them back to the land of Judah. Then Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, "Go back, each of you, to your mother's home. May the Lord show kindness to you as you have shown to your dead and to me. May the Lord grant that each of you will find rest in the home of another husband." Then she kissed them, and they wept aloud and said to her, "We will go back with you to our people, to your people." But Naomi said, "Return home, my daughters. Why would you come with me? Am I going to have any more sons who could become your husbands? Return home, my daughters. I am too old to have another husband. Even if I thought there was still hope for me, even if I had a husband tonight and then gave birth to sons, would you wait until they grew up? Would you remain unmarried for them? No, my daughters, it is more bitter for me than for you, because the Lord's hand has gone out against me." At this they wept again. Then Orpah kissed her mother-in-law goodbye, but Ruth clung to her. "Look," said Naomi, "your sister-in-law is going back to her people and her gods. Go back with her. But Ruth replied, "Don't urge me to leave you or to turn back from you. Where you go, I will go, and where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there will I be buried. May the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if anything but death separates you and me." When Naomi realized that Ruth was determined to go with her, she stopped urging her. So the two women went on until they came to Bethlehem. When they arrived in Bethlehem, the whole town was stirred because of them, and the women exclaimed, "Can this be Naomi?" "Don't call me Naomi," she told them. "Call me Mara, because the Almighty has made my life very bitter. I went away full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi? The Lord has afflicted me. The Almighty has brought misfortune upon me." So Naomi returned from Moab, accompanied by Ruth, the Moabitess, her daughter-in-law, arriving in Bethlehem as the barley harvest was beginning. Now Naomi had a relative on her husband's side from the clan of Elimelech, a man of standing whose name was Boaz. And Ruth, the Moabitess, said to Naomi, "Let me go to the fields and pick up the leftover grain behind anyone in whose eyes I find favor." Naomi said to her, "Go ahead, my daughter." So she went out and began to glean in the fields behind the harvesters. As it turned out, she found herself working in a field belonging to Boaz, who was from the clan of Elimelech. Just then, Boaz arrived from Bethlehem and greeted the harvesters. "The Lord be with you." "The Lord bless you," they called back. Boaz asked the foreman of his harvesters, "Whose young woman is that?" The foreman replied, "She is the Moabitess who came back from Moab with Naomi. She said, 'Please let me glean and gather among the sheaves behind the harvesters.' She went into the field and has worked steadily from morning till now, except for a short rest in the shelter." So Boaz said to Ruth, "My daughter, listen to me. Don't go and glean in another field, and don't go away from here. Stay here with my servant girls. Watch the field where the men are harvesting and follow along after the girl. I have told the men not to touch you, and whenever you are thirsty, go and get a drink from the water jars the men have filled." At this, she bowed down with her face to the ground. She exclaimed, "Why have I found such favor in your eyes that you notice me, a foreigner?" Boaz replied, "I've been told all about what you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband, how you left your father and mother and your homeland and came to live with a people you did not know before. May the Lord repay you for what you have done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge. May I continue to find favor in your eyes, my Lord," she said. "You have given me comfort and have spoken kindly to your servant, though I do not have the standing of one of your servant girls." At mealtime, Boaz said to her, "Come over here, have some bread, and dip it in the wine vinegar." When she sat down with the harvesters, he offered her some roasted grain. She ate all she wanted and had some left over. As she got up to glean, Boaz gave orders to his men, "Even if she gathers among the sheaves, don't embarrass her. Rather, pull out some stalks for her from the bundles and leave them for her to pick up, and don't rebuke her." So Ruth gleaned in the field until evening. Then she threshed the barley she had gathered, and it amounted to about an ephah. She carried it back to town, and her mother-in-law saw how much she had gathered. Ruth also brought out and gave her what she had left over after she had eaten enough. Her mother-in-law asked her, "Where did you glean today? Where did you work? Blessed be the man who took notice of you." Then Ruth told her mother-in-law about the one at whose place she had been working. The name of the man I worked with today is Boaz, she said. The Lord bless him, Naomi said to her daughter-in-law. He has not stopped showing his kindness to the living and the dead. She added, that man is our close relative. He is one of our kinsmen redeemers. Then Ruth the Moabitess said, he even said to me, stay with my workers until they finish harvesting all my grain. Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, it will be good for you, my daughter, to go with his girls, because in someone else's field you might be harmed. So Ruth stayed close to the servant girls of Boaz to glean with until the barley and the wheat harvests were finished. And she lived with her mother-in-law. Chapter 3. One day Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, my daughter, should I not try to find a home for you where you will be well provided for? Is not Boaz, with whose servant girls you have been, a kinsman of ours? Tonight he will be winnowing barley on the threshing floor. Wash and perfume yourself and put on your best clothes. Then go down to the threshing floor, but don't let him know you are there until he has finished eating and drinking. When he lies down, note the place where he is lying. Then go and uncover his feet and lie down. He will tell you what to do. I will do whatever you say, Ruth answered. So she went down to the threshing floor and did everything her mother-in-law told her to do. When Boaz had finished eating and drinking and was in good spirits, he went over to lie down at the far end of the grain pile. Ruth approached quietly, uncovered his feet, and lay down. In the middle of the night, something startled the man, and he turned and discovered a woman lying at his feet. Who are you? He asked. I am your servant Ruth, she said. Spread the corner of your garment over me, since you are a kinsman redeemer. The Lord bless you, my daughter, he replied. This kindness is greater than that which you showed earlier. You have not run after the younger men, whether rich or poor. And now, my daughter, don't be afraid. I will do for you all you ask. All my fellow townsmen know that you are a woman of noble character. Although it is true that I am near of kin, there is a kinsman redeemer nearer than I. Stay here for the night, and in the morning, if he wants to redeem, good, let him redeem. But if he is not willing, as surely as the Lord lives, I will do it. Lie here until morning. So she lay at his feet until morning, but got up before anyone could be recognized, and he said, don't let it be known that a woman came to the threshing floor. He also said, bring me the shawl you are wearing and hold it out. When she did so, he poured into it 6 measures of barley and put it on her. Then he went back to town. When Ruth came to her mother-in-law, Naomi asked, how did it go, my daughter? Then she told her everything Boaz had done for her, and added, he gave me these 6 measures of barley, saying, don't go back to your mother-in-law empty-handed. Then Naomi said, wait, my daughter, until you find out what happens, for the man will not rest until the matter is settled today. Chapter 4. Meanwhile, Boaz went up to the town gate and sat there. When the kinsman redeemer he had mentioned came along, Boaz said, come over here, my friend, and sit down. So he went over and sat down. Boaz took 10 of the elders of the town and said, sit here, and they did so. Then he said to the kinsman redeemer, Naomi, who has come back from Moab, is selling the piece of land that belonged to our brother Elimelech. I thought I should bring the matter to your attention and suggest that you buy it in the presence of these seated here and in the presence of the elders of my people. If you will redeem it, do so. But if you will not, tell me, so I will know. For no one has the right to do it except you, and I am next in line. I will redeem it, he said. Then Boaz said, on the day you buy the land from Naomi, from Ruth the Moabitess, you acquire the dead man's widow in order to maintain the name of the dead with his property. At this, the kinsman redeemer said, "Then I cannot redeem it, because I might endanger my own estate. You redeem it for yourself. I cannot do it." Now, in earlier times in Israel, for the redemption and transfer of property to become final, one party took off his sandal and gave it to the other. This was the method of legalizing transactions in Israel. So the kinsman redeemer said to Boaz, "Buy it yourself," and he removed his sandal. Then Boaz announced to the elders and all the people, "Today you are witnesses that I have bought from Naomi all the property of Elimelech, Chilion, and Mahlon. I have also acquired Ruth the Moabitess, Mahlon's widow, as my wife in order to maintain the name of the dead with his property, so that his name will not disappear from among his family or from the town records. Today you are witnesses." Then the elders and all those at the gate said, "We are witnesses. May the Lord make the woman who is coming into your home like Rachel and Leah, who together built up the house of Israel. May you have standing in Ephrathah and be famous in Bethlehem. Through the offspring the Lord gives you by this young woman, may your family be like that of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah." So Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife. Then he went to her, and the Lord enabled her to conceive, and she gave birth to a son. The women said to Naomi, "Praise be to the Lord, who this day has not left you without a kinsman redeemer. May he become famous throughout Israel. He will renew your life and sustain you in your old age. For your daughter-in-law, who loves you and who is better to you than seven sons, has given him birth." Then Naomi took the child, laid him in her lap, and cared for him. The women living there said, "Naomi has a son," and they named him Obed. And he was the father of Jesse, the father of David. This, then, is the family line of Perez. Perez was the father of Hezron. Hezron, the father of Ram. Ram, the father of Amminadab. Amminadab, the father of Nashon. Nashon, the father of Salmon. Salmon, the father of Boaz. Boaz, the father of Obed. Obed, the father of Jesse. And Jesse, the father of David.
Thank you, Bob.
Seldom we have the opportunity to read an entire book of Scripture. And the practice of life of Israel, it was common. And Jerry, when he has a smaller book, has always made it his practice to have it read as well, and so I thought I'd take the opportunity. Now, as we continue on, I hope you were able to keep at least these two things in mind as you heard the book read. The overall purpose, or aim of the book, or another way we can put it, why did God put this as part of his special revelation to us? Let's begin there. Belda? Story of redemption, okay? And who's redeemed? Can you sort of expand on that just a little bit, Belda? Okay. Okay. One out, Muriel. Anyone else venture an idea here? Yes.
Sort of like what Paul talks about getting grafted into the vine.
Okay. Romans 11. Right.
It's an example of somebody who is not part of the covenant, who is an outsider, who becomes part of God's people, of God's plan. And in this case, it turned out to be not just any old somebody. It turned out that it was very important later on. But, you know, what was that? Part of showing how people can get to God's kingdom and God.
Okay. There was one, Gary? Providential working, Jim?
I thought the first prayer was for God, he wanted me only to do too much. Brought back and redeemed the family names and parents who began watching for 15 days before the Lord.
That's right. That theme of redemption goes back to what Belva said earlier, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And restoration. That's a good point. So we have issues of it shows God's grace to an individual, bringing an alien, as it were, to the blessings of the covenant community. And through that, the whole nation of Israel was blessed through her offspring, eventually that was David. And it also speaks of God's providential care over the affairs, not only the large affairs, but the small affairs of the life of Israel. And of course, redemption. Anything else?
Or the final paragraph is clear.
Okay. Okay. So you would say that the main purpose would be basically to show the link up between Ruth and David. Okay. Let me just ask you a question on that. How necessary is that? Could we have gotten along without that? Okay. Well, the reason I'm saying that is that, you know, my question is, it would seem to me that there would be more to it than just that. I mean, because you could have just put that in a genealogy as an appendix to the Book of Judges, possibly.
On the other hand, it seems to me that you would know that you're the right path. But without that, it's so close.
Okay.
And not judging.
Okay. As we continue to investigate the book, all of these ideas will be tested as we continue to look through the book. Okay, Andrea? Okay. Right. Yeah, I wouldn't deny the importance of the genealogy. I'm just wondering if there's more to it than just that. If when they came to include it in the canon, there was more reason to include it than just the genealogy.
Sure.
Well,
do you suppose there's any reason? She's an example of one of four women or so that are listed in the line of David, and all of them, as I recall, are not originally people of Israel. In some cases,
Now, I'm wondering, as I'm going to move, Steve, let me just make a comment and I'll get right to you. That possibly, again, when we think of purpose, we're thinking of something usually more singular in nature within a book. And we brought up several things, and, you know, it may be that one or these things really sort of hold the key to the purpose or aim of the book, and some of these other things may fall in the realm of values, you know, certain values of the book. And as we continue, you know, let's kind of draw out too some of the values that we can get, that can be derived from this book. Steve?
This probably falls under values, so I think that's what I'm talking about. I see a tremendous significance to one vision of life, what it meant to work on, what it meant to do, and thus the truth of identity, that commitment when she said, your child shall be my God. She meant to all of us to be in talking to them. For work on
them. Right. Anyone else? I'd like to venture something here. Okay, just have a few minutes, just a few concluding remarks as we go on. One, just tease something out here. I believe that Rahab is going to find its way in this book at a point, that'll come out later. Also, that one of the reasons that I chose this book is also, it's a book that's set, as the first verse speaks of, in the time of the judges. In the time of the judges, generally were a time of darkness, a time progressively where they turned away from the God who had redeemed them out of Egypt. And at the end of the book of Judges, and some feel they were sort of appendices to it, are some two stories that are heart-wrenching, that where darkness descends in a most gruesome way upon the nation. And there are many terrible things, gruesome things going on in the world today. Things that shock, you know, the heart, the imagination. And it's a time where it would be easy for our hearts to grow faint or cold or indifferent to the things of God and God's working within the kingdom. It's maybe the temptation to sort of sit back on the sidelines and say, well, it looks like it's just about ready to come down. And so we're just going to sit back on the 50-yard line and watch God come down and just, you know, really clean people's clocks, as it were. I feel the book of Ruth has some redeeming value in that in the midst of darkness, God still, providentially, reveals himself and cares for his people. It's a book that encourages faith in the unseen workings of God. And that is something that we need today in such a pragmatic society, you know, where it's the things that we can see, the things that we can manipulate, the things that we can control are the things that we put our faith into. Okay? Ruth put her faith into something that could not be seen. And if you take the definition of faith in Hebrews, Ruth exercises pure faith. Okay? That's a redeeming value, I believe, of this book. I also believe that chapter 2, verse 12, may give us some key. And this is where I will align myself with some, and I will disalign, as it were, myself with others as far as the purpose of this book. Where Boaz responds to Ruth and says, may the Lord repay you for what you have done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge. Much of the Old Testament is a witness to God's providential care of his people. And I believe this is a remarkable example of God's providential care. And I want to close with an illustration. And I received it last night at International Teams at the dinner where they were welcoming back missionaries. Because I believe this illustration that took place in France is something that highlights one of the redeeming values and in some ways may be tied up in the purpose and aim of this book. A missionary couple working in France, when they first arrived, wanted to, you know, make contact. And one of the ways they sought to do that was to try to be used as teaching English, by teaching English to some of the French people. So they went down to this grocery store not far from their house and put up an advertisement, you know, for tutoring in English. And there was no answer for weeks. And finally, they got an answer, and it was a mother who said, "Would you just please come over and sort of supplement my daughter's work with English?" Now, it wasn't the sort of contact that this young fellow was looking for. It didn't seem very substantial at the time. But he said, well, it's the beginning. And so he went and he began this association with this young girl and began then a relationship with her mother and eventually her father. And they just returned, and one of the things the father said is, "You have our address, you have our phone number, make sure you call us." It was a solid contact. But what was very interesting, because he was wondering, you know, what, this is all that's happened thus far in all our time here, almost a year, from the fall to the following spring. And in that spring, he received a publication from International Teams, quarterly or monthly publication. And if you've ever been overseas, anything you get from the States, you just read, you know, word for word. Well, he read through the whole thing and went back, started looking at it, and then there was a little thing that said, the cover photo. So he looked at, you know, what this cover photo on the beginning of it was. And he says, a girl who is working in the same area as they were right now, about 4 years earlier, 3 or 4 years earlier. And it's a picture of her with her group of children that she was ministering to. And so he went back and he started looking at the photograph again. And lo and behold, who was in that photograph? But that girl that he had been tutoring in English. Folks, I mean, that is a marvelous example of God's concern, not for just all the big, spectacular things, but the life of this little girl who he touched 4 years earlier and sent this family all the way over to again touch her life. The same girl. And at that point, he knew that God had already been at work in this little girl's life. Now, what may happen with this relationship to this girl? Contact with the parents? Who knows what this may end up leading to? And the book of Ruth is very similar. It shows God's concern for this insignificant Moabite woman. And yet it leads, even as we've taught, to the blessing to the whole nation through the offspring in the form of David. As we begin to look into this book, I believe one of the redeeming values will be strengthening of our understanding that God's just not concerned about the big things, but he over and over and over shows that his heart beats for those little things, the things that often we overlook. Let's pray. Father, thank you for the opportunity to look into this marvelous and remarkable little book. We pray that you would enlarge our hearts and increase our faith as we investigate the life of not only Ruth, but Naomi and Boaz. Grant, Father, your blessing, we pray in Jesus' name. Amen.